Rovers Fantasy Football Podcast.
I am your host, Roger Kirby, and with me, as always, is Mr. Stephen Rudkin.
Good evening, Roger. And it's week one in the books. In fact, we're into week two. It's great to actually be able to talk about some real football on this episode.
Certainly is. As we have been putting out there on Twitter and the various discussion pages, our schedules are a little bit all over the show with family events this week, so it had to be Friday to catch up. But off the bat, we're going to throw over to Mr. Stephen Rudkin with the classified results inspired by James Alexander Gordon. Go check it out on Wikipedia.
Here are your classified results for week one. In the Move the Sticks League, Old Man Strength took down the Playmakers 112-74 to go to 1-0. Spearheaded by Jamal Charles and Amir Abdullah, Wyatt was helped to the win when the Giants laid out the red carpet for his quarterback Tony Romo to walk in that last-minute touchdown and take his victory. Scratch and Sniff beat out Eskimo Bros Database 81-71, thanks to 22 points from Matt Forte. The D-Train resumed last season's regular season form by racking up 122 points against the newcomers, Fanatics, with only 95. There was no looking back when Gronk's 27.4 points in the season opener for David led the D-Train to the first win of the season. Choo-choo! In the battle of the two rookies, New York Bozo beat out Rudder's Niners 87-70, largely thanks 37 points combined for his two running backs, Ivory and Lacey. I've made a huge mistake, made no mistakes, in taking down the Cowboy Crusaders 105-69. Roger was aided by a huge Monday night from Julio Jones. In the biggest win of the week, Gobias Industries smashed out the Studambiago Lagers 122-79, 30 points from Carlos Hyde on Monday night, now down the victory for yours truly. Speaking of yours truly, in the Hall of Lame League, the future Hall of Lamers pipped the G-Men to a 95-87 win, again courtesy of Hyde's Monday night performance. Tony's Intimidators took down a Real Americans American team by 105-82. The Stockholm Stiff Arms were put under a spell by the Magicians Alliance, losing out 134-82. Gronk If You're Horny won over Unruly Mustache 126-71, led by 27 points from his hero, his boy, Tom Brady. The Macclesfield Mannings lost in a high-scoring match to Zach Stacy's mom, 100-123. And lastly, in the lowest score I think I've ever witnessed in fantasy, Bootzilla beat out Forest Green Army 60 points to a paltry 26.5 points for Neville's side. Finally, in the Pipe and Slippers Dynasty League, we had a number of close games, starting with the One Cheddars beating Sharkies 1 by 2 points, 93-91. Lombardi Slap scored 104 against James's Gronk If You're Horny on 101. The Honey Badgers beat the Silent Assassin 103-91. X Factors beat his buddy Minion Terror 84-67. In the long name matchup of the week, It's Like Giving Candy to a Baby lost 90-108 against Compromised Underpants. Finally, the Negatrons took the air out of the deflated footballs 124-102. And that rounds up all the results from week one. Back to you, Roger.
Thank you very much there, Ridders. And obviously we have brothers on the other end of this line, so you know, it was pre-recorded, which hopefully will come across thanks to some post-edit stuff from my good friend, seamlessly. I guess
you didn't mean to say it was pre-recorded, that was all seamlessly done live.
My bad, I peeked behind the curtain there. I just drifted off into the ether somewhere for 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, I hope you all enjoyed that roundup of the results, because I think that might be the way we go forward, so we kill the time, get that out of the way.
Yeah, you've definitely got to type in James Alexander Gordon from Radio 5 Live, who does the soccer ball classified results.
I believe you can find the odd clip on YouTube of him reading the results. So, for all us British players in these fantasy leagues, I'm sure some of our fellow players know about him. But to all you Americans, you need to check him out.
Yeah, so I guess it comes over to hot takes from last week before we get into the Thursday night game and start looking forward.
Yes, indeed. Week one in the books. It's almost, again, you almost feel just so overwhelmed with how much competitive action there was, how many things going on that the off season and the pre-season never really readies you properly for all the events that then unfold that you could talk about for days on end following the first week.
And narratives after week one are already starting to be developed and you know, and written, and you know, you feel like you're heading down this, you know, the book's already been, you know, out on these X, Y, or Z, and you know, it's crazy, and there was so many snap judgments. So off the top of your head, what was the biggest thing that you took away from week one?
Biggest thing. It's hard to really pin down one thing, but I guess one of the things is running the ball with Lynch may not have worked in the Super Bowl last year. It's obviously one of the takeaways from that overtime loss. They couldn't manage that to get that fourth down through for the Seahawks. But we all know the Rams are a feisty little bunch, so that league and that division, sorry, is once again going to be very competitive with the 49ers looking, again, like many people, better than expected.
Yeah, and for me, I think it's less of a takeaway, but more how fun it is to watch Gronk, and just love, you know, you know, when I've gone on in this podcast countless times about how fun it is to watch him, but, you know, after the off season and then watching Brady throw to him, and you know, the one he catches on the sort of slant sort of play, well, it's more of a post sort of route that he runs, and he just looks like the Bionicle Man as he hands somebody off at the face and kind of carries it another 20 yards. He's just so fun to watch, so physical. Without doubt, the most fun player in the NFL for me to watch. I can just watch him all day.
Head and shoulders above anybody else in terms of how far he is ahead at his position. I mean, some would say J.J. Watt, but there's loads of other emerging defensive linemen around the league doing great stuff too.
Donald looked great, as you've already mentioned, for the Rams. I think Houston. And we'll touch on him in this lovely transition that was almost planned onto the Thursday night game.
Yeah, been a bit of a hectic, busy week for myself, so not managed to watch very much of last night's action as we record here on Friday. But interesting, there was so many turnovers involved in a game between what then really sells itself as to how well these two defences look going for the season forward. I mean, two really epic defences is what we're seeing really between these two teams.
Yeah, I don't think there's an awful lot between the two teams, to be honest with you. I think it's been well written, but I think that the Broncos' offence is finding its way. And I've listened to the Around the NFL podcast today, and Chris Weston, I think, summed it up nicely in a piece that he wrote as well, which says that, you know, when Mike McCoy took, you know, Peyton Manning and those two meshed together when in Manning's first season with the Broncos, and they were 2-3 and nothing was really clicking, McCoy was big enough to go back and say, look, it's your show, Peyton. And I genuinely do think that Kubiak is going to have to do that, you know, right or wrong. You know, that they're not really been able to run the ball. And don't get me wrong, the fronts of the Ravens and the Chiefs are one of the better two fronts in the league. But I definitely think when you look at it, Manning looks so much better when he's in shotgun and he's running his own thing. So,
yeah, his quality as a quarterback, he is that pitter-pat of his feet scurrying back from under center doesn't really bode well at this age of his
life. No, and I've seen him do two rollouts, bootleg rollouts to his left. He just doesn't look comfortable with it. So I think there is a meshing going on, but I think ultimately you're gonna see more of the Manning playbook sprinkled with an element of the Kubiak long term, because that defense is lights out. And on the other side, Houston was fantastic. Peters at cornerback, you know, the two games. Yeah. I mean, we watched the Houston game last week, and he had a pick on the first play. Hopkins did do him a little bit occasionally, but I think he's looked really, really solid. And for a corner coming in, and when you consider the likes of Gilbert, you know, the Browns struggled so badly as a first-round pick. These guys don't normally come in and make huge splashes. You know, I think Dean Milner, you know, and DJ Hayden are the recent ones to spring to mind as guys that have come in and really struggled in the league. So
it really is a difficult position to get early on, and it's more often than not somebody who isn't really talked about that comes in under the radar as a fifth, sixth kind of round pick that isn't almost forced into being a starting player that does the job right.
Yeah, and a lot of people were put off with some of the off-field stuff with Peters. I remember that he was kind of one of the guys with a hell of a lot of talent in the draft, but there was a few red flags against him. He certainly seems to have come in and, you know, I've got a lot of time for Bob Sutton, who was at the Jets previously, and he certainly knows how to dial up the pressure. Smith and Charles, not one of their better days at the office, unfortunately, but I think they'll be there with their bats in the end. I think, you know, if the Chiefs had won that game, no one would have had any arguments at all. So,
yeah, I
think it goes well for both teams, to be honest with you.
Just going back a bit to week one when we watched the full game there with the Chiefs, that first half against what was another good front. The Texans, that way that Smith, Charles and Kelsey mainly got involved just looked really just like it could take down anybody. Obviously it didn't come to fruition this week against the Broncos, but they have parts of their game with Macklin now that they do look a lot more of an all-round team.
Yeah, and I still think that they're finding their feet with Macklin, and I think obviously, you know, when you've got Harris and Tlaib as your corners, excellent corners. You know, I think for all of the stuff that Tlaib has sort of been associated with, some of the negative stuff, and he seemed to bounce around between Tampa and then the Patriots, and it was a hell of a lot of money they paid for him in last offseason in free agency. He has looked a real, you know, competent, true professional over the last 18 months or so. So, yeah, both defenses are feisty, and I wouldn't be surprised to see both teams in the playoffs. Although your team certainly looked dead and buried and came back out of nowhere seemingly last week.
Yeah, there's again another, I'd say, a really competitive division apart from the team in Oakland. When you watch the Chiefs and the Broncos, although the Chargers can have their moments, overall as a whole squad, you feel the Chargers are a little bit behind those top two. But we should say it's a long season. It's only week two.
Certainly is. And the jury is well and truly not out on anybody yet.
Just capping off the Thursday night game, I was just looking at our Pick'em group, the Python Slippers podcast Pick'em group on NFL.com, if you want to search for that. We have 13 users in there from our various leagues. Only two of us managed to pick the Chiefs. I mean, sorry, to pick the Broncos to win last night.
Yeah.
The rest of us all went Chiefs, came unstuck.
Yeah, and looking at the picks from last week, nobody really romped away with it.
No, there were, what have I got here right now? Four of us went 11-5, myself included. Four of us went 10-6, which yourself included. And then a couple around the 500 mark. So very close that we've got eight guys all within one pick of each other after week one, but no real big kind of 12, 13, 14 pick week.
Did you say the Broncos? Did you say?
I did, yes. So we both 0-1 for this week. No, sorry. I took the Chiefs. You took the Chiefs.
Yes.
We're both 0-1 for this.
Yeah, I had the Chiefs. I thought that the Chiefs would, their offense would find a way after seemingly how well they did against.
And I almost didn't expect Peyton to be able to really put together some scoring drives after what we saw from week one.
No, I'm saying when they went to shotgun and it was no huddle and he was in charge and he was running it how they run it, and there was pick plays and there was crossing routes and you know they were running that, you know, that offense that you know they're very comfortable with, they look better. But I have to say something that I did notice that really impressed me: Demaryius Thomas, for a guy that I've never really seen go up and high point balls and really kind of, you know, maul cornerbacks, he did that a few times on those last couple of drives and came with a few big plays. So I'd like to see him do more of that, because, you know, in terms of, you know, the little dump offs and screen plays that he does, he's probably the best receiver in terms of with the ball in his hands and after the catch. But I'd like to see him be a little bit more aggressive, and it was nice to see.
I think that's very similar to the way Julio plays as well down in Atlanta. He's, and in particular in the new offense this year, we saw a bit of it. His yards after catch is going to be massive this year. And him and Thomas both seem a bit similar in that aspect, but they don't necessarily always seem like they're real red zone high-pointing threats like obviously Calvin or AJ Green or Dez.
Yeah, Dez is the one that springs to mind, isn't he?
So, it's good to see Thomas fall into that. And if you almost want to look at this kind of ranking out there of who is the best receiver, it's almost a race that's hotting up. Everybody's kind of pushing forward, and that's what's great about the NFL at the moment. So many guys are almost excelling and moving their game forwards, and it makes it ultra competitive. And that's why we love this league.
Certainly do.
So, where would you like to head to next?
I think we need to put a little bit of a cherry and a bow on last week. So, do you want to cover the sort of highs and lows awards ceremony time?
Yes, indeed. So, this podcast last year, we were mainly focusing on the Move the Sticks League. So we used to pick three nominations for yourself to vote on to the best move of the week, and named after yourself, the I've Made a Huge Mistake Award for the week. But this year, because we're covering three leagues, we've got one nomination of a move and a mistake from each of the three leagues for you to pick out your favourite.
A little peek behind the curtain. I'm not in on these mistakes. Obviously, I'm aware and I've seen the results around the league, but you picked them, and so you get a hot take, instant reaction from me.
Yeah, I think just to preface this, the week one is a little tricky because everybody generally has a full strength roster. They've not done too much changing, Wyatt, in between the draft and now.
The Claudio Ranieri of the NFL fantasy.
In fact, my brother even mentioned to me the other day, I noticed you have no transactions since the draft and playing week one, and my lineup hasn't changed since the draft. Like, the way I said it day one is the way it's stayed, but I'm just thankful that injuries allowed for that. So, yeah, you've got the Tinkerman Wyatt still busy as ever.
Yeah, I was a little busy and frisky. I was so pleased, to be honest. I couldn't believe that no one else came for Tyler Eifert this week after the week he had. He looked sensational after the elbow injury.
There was a few waiver requests out there, but when you win across all the leagues, you struggle to pick up those high waiver picks.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yes. So just to say that there's not been too much of highlighted errors by people dropping a player that then comes good. So if we start with the mistakes, in the Move the Sticks League, we have one for Danby, for basically playing the wrong Bills receiver in the end. Watkins, who scored 0 points. I read that he had three targets,
right, okay,
and didn't pull any of them down. I not managed to watch all of that action yet.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrod Taylor, and he chipped it 20 times, which it, you know, it's exactly what the Bills want to do.
And of those 20-odd times, he obviously got a couple completions to Percy Harvin, who Danby had on his bench, which was 14.8 points for him. So that's nomination one. Nomination two from the Hall of Lame is quite simply Neville. And the Forest Green Army, there's no real way to single out any move in particular, but what I believe to be the lowest score I've ever seen in fantasy.
I'm not going to lie to you, I must have checked it about 5 or 6 times to see if there was a glitch or something that I was missing.
But Neville's got 26.5 points.
How did I even manage that?
I know, and it's no real glaring things like the whole team were injured. So it's even Peyton Manning at the top of his team with 4.9. Roy Helu really was the one kind of mary mistake. And again, he had Sammy Watkins, who got 0. The Colts, who got shocked by the Bills and took 0 for the defense. Just all across the board, nobody got higher than AJ Green, 6.3. So Neville for his overall play in week one. And finally, in the Pipe and Slippers, we have Bruce for what ended up being quite a close game against the X-Factors. He played Victor Cruz. A little bit of an oversight and an error there on his behalf. So there are 3 mistake nominations.
Bruce.
He's not Australian.
He's not Australian.
No.
Bruce is Australian.
The Minion Terrors.
Bruce is such an Australian name.
I know. Shame.
It's maybe the neighbours thing.
I'm staying well away from the Australian accents. I'll let Anthony get back to you on that.
You're more of a South African accent kind of guy.
Yeah, I am, eh?
Or another good one is Sevriello. Valisteros, because nothing's better than Sunderland.
I can't even do it now.
Go on. Share with the listeners.
Nothing better than Sunderland. That sounded a little bit more Asian than Spanish at this moment.
There's nothing better about Sunderland. I was just turning to Chris Eubank now. Let's move on. Okay,
who are you going for? Danby, Neville or Bruce?
I'm going to go for Bruce, mainly because I just... there's no way I'd have played Cruz.
Or even...
Santa Cruz, for some reason. Cruz, after his knee injury and some of the issues that had been reported.
I think if you double down as well, I forgot to highlight the fact you played Jordan Todman as well, which was a little bit of a surprising move there on Bruce's behalf. Just trying to look at other options he had available on his bench. He had the Saints receiver Coleman, got 10 points. Nobody else really scored on his bench, but there were certainly players who were playing.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those is that, yeah, given that, all the injury issues that I've had, I think he's a good stash, but one you'd have stayed well clear of. So, Brace, who isn't Australian, I think we need to, put it out there for fear of being sued.
That award will be on its way to you in the post, which
is a fictional award, obviously, but it will be on the message wall at some stage and in your I wonder what it's called, draft? I can't remember what it's called on the on your team thing. You go trophy room, is it?
There is a trophy.
Yes,
yeah.
There we go.
Moving on to the moves of the week. We're going to start in the Move the Sticks League, and we are going with David and the D-Train simply for drafting Rob Gronkowski. And the reason why I'm highlighting this is because he managed to pick him up pick 16 overall.
No, that's a really nice pickup.
And to take home 27 points, was it, in week one?
Yeah, and when you consider, and then the big thing that you like the Rob Gronkowski pickup is, without, going into too much, and I've waxed lyrical about him earlier in the show, but he gives you such a potential points differential between the other tight ends in the league. It's a huge benefit.
Yeah.
Go on. Go, keep going.
So that's David. In the Hall of Lame, we have James. Kicker news. I didn't actually check who he drafted, but I think it was maybe Novak or somebody. So he had to add a kicker ahead of week one after having a shocker from the draft. He added McManus of the Broncos, who took home 17 points.
And I believe I actually said on the messaging board that that could be a kicker that makes a difference. I like to call the shots sometimes before they happen.
Well done to our league champion there, James. And then in the Pipe and Slippers League, it's almost craziness is a bit of a question. How on earth did Lombardi Slap manage to get Aaron Rodgers and Rob Gronkowski in the draft? That is basically a great move from the draft. It resulted in a week one win. So that is Matt and Lombardi slap for being able to play Rodgers and Gronk.
Yeah, I know. Some draft. He must have been able to pick them up sort of back end of the first.
Yes, it is picks 11 and 14 in the end. So
I think it was one of the scenarios I'd told with in the sort of the mock drafts going down that route. But nothing, where I ended up drafting never really materialised, and unfortunately I kind of went back to my own ways of draft that sort of bell cow back and go from there. But for me, the move has to be James and the kicker, because it was a true move. And I think you've
often kicker was.
Yeah, you've often said to me is that, you know, you get the right defense and the right kicker, and I know you're picking them up potentially 15 or 16, but if you can get them and play the matchups and find those guys, they can be a real asset. They can be the difference between, you know, you winning and losing, you know, which can be the difference between you in the playoffs where anything can happen.
Yes, exactly. So, well done, James. That was a good win for you this week. So they are the awards. Again, a fictional award will be coming to you in the post or on the message board. And we look to repeat this segment weekly.
It's a nice segment. It's one of my favourites.
Moving on to our next segment. You've got some matchups you want to just take a look at, moving on to week two.
Yeah, but we try and preview a game that we kind of liked in each of the three leagues. You know, again, we're trying to make this a more inclusive of the three leagues and make sure that we kind of touch all the listeners and make it as all-inclusive as possible. Anthony in the Move the Sticks League is doing an absolutely fantastic job with the, I can't think what it's called, the
newsletter,
yes, and some real absolute gems. My favourite this week being that after winning last week, Lombardi slapped Matt, celebrated by hitting the over 55 Korean singles mixer real hard.
Yes.
So that's just one of the ones, but that was the one that really kind of had me smiling and laughing to myself. So again, thank you very much to Anthony for providing that. It's some top draw stuff. Oh, and I've just been favourited by Chris Wesley for my for a tweet that I sent out there.
Special work once again in Arrested Development.
Yes, it had me chuckling in the park with the dog. But so, onto the games. I wanted to cover the D-Train because David got off to an absolute flyer last year with the oldest team recorded in a fantasy draft. But he had Peyton Manning last year and absolutely went off on one. So we just interested to cover him and have a kind of look at his team. And he's facing your bro. I'm still not impressed with his coldest team, Rivers. I'm afraid in my head there's only one Rivers.
Yes, indeed. Exactly.
Do you have fights over who's called Rudders?
No. However, when we did used to work together back at TaylorMade Golf, we all got these special caps made with our names for us in the workshop where we build golf clubs. And because he was there first, a few of them also called him Rudders. I think I often got called Mini Rudders. But when the caps got delivered, his said Rudders, which I was very disappointed about. That was for him because mine said Steve. So everyone else got nicknames and I got Steve.
Not Mr. Manager,
I'm no, afraid not. So yeah, unfortunately it's more the eldest gets first dibs often. So yes, the Rudders Niners are still the team in the league, and they take on the D Train, who just racks up points for fun in the regular season.
And with Cam, I think that was the surprising thing, because he had Cam and DeMarco Murray, and DeMarco didn't really do an awful lot on the ground when we, you know, all things thought about that he was going to rack up a load of numbers in that Chip Kelly offense as a very north-south kind of runner. But obviously he had Gronkowski, which is a huge thing, and we were talking beforehand about the Bills being a pickup that potentially is that, you know, I quite like to play the matchups with my defense, but I think picking up the Bills, I think you just leave them in there, forget about them, take them out in your bye week and bung them back in because they look lights out.
Yeah, to pick up 9 points from a defense against Andrew Luck, albeit at home, that's a really good score and bodes well for the way they could score against lesser quarterbacks and offenses. I think the other thing I like is DeAndre Hopkins, a little bit underrated. Obviously got a bit of profiling from Hard Knocks, but we were talking earlier about the guys in the red zone who can go up and get a ball. He is emerging as one with some seriously good hands who manages to fight and wrestle and pull down balls out of the sky.
And the one he caught from Mallet was an absolute dart, and he really did high point that thing. So interesting, you know, the way that he's attacked it. And I'm also interested in the Alfred Morris pickup, because one of the reasons I stayed away from him so much is because I think he's a fantastic running back, but I was always scared that Washington were going to be out of games very, very early and they were going to have to start chucking it in the air. But Morris, you know, fantastic player, you know, in outside of the fantasy world, but always seems to rack up fantasy numbers, confounding that thing of, you know, trying to stay away from the guys, the runners on teams that are going to get away from stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I've got Doug Martin won the league, and I'm a little bit sort of like, it's great, but the books have got to stay in games for him to make points for me.
Yeah, I think with Morris, it's the question of, there's stats about how he's obviously more effective when he's playing with RG3, and the auction plays, allowing him more space. So, yet to see how that emerges now that RG3 is a scout team safety and not a quarterback in this league.
Unbelievable.
I know. But going back to the D train, just trying to look as well what he's done this week. He's moving Steve Smith, I believe, into his lineup. So, he's still got that age in his roster from last year. He does like the elder statesman, dropping Alan Robinson, and picked up Benny Cunningham, who talk train Mason might be back involved this week.
Yeah, but if Mason's not there, it's a good spot start.
It was a nice little one that I actually did last week in the Pipe and Slippers,
nice.
I believe. So,
we'll move into the Hall of Lame League now, and it's a replay of last year's grand finale. I don't really know what accent that was, but it's Grunk If You Were Horny and James versus the future Hall of Lamers, and the owner is Mr. Stephen Lukin.
Who has stretched out into a big lead after Thursday night, 20.7 to 20.6.
Yes, so, and that has come from one single individual there in Emmanuel Sanders, who looked lights out again and is rapidly becoming Peyton Manning's go-to guy on third down.
Yes, I like his speed, and we obviously talk at receiver-wise in Denver. He emerged a lot more last year with Decker moving on, and then again this year with the tight end moving on, Julius Thomas. You would see more balls come his way, but obviously the Kubiak offense effect and the lesser tight ends probably getting more involved and maybe running the ball a bit more. You thought it might limit Sanders, but he's emerged into one of the quality number twos around the league, so he gets a lot of balls his way.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see that at the moment. James has got two empty spaces in his lineup, but you know, Ivory looks like a serious back, and they're going to hand in the ball quite a lot. You've got Hyde, who looked excellent, and after seeing the way that the Steelers defended last week, could rack up some real big numbers.
Hyde's been one of the ones where I remember on our live draft, you reacted quite shockingly to how
I was going off the basis that I think that the 49ers are going to be down in a lot of games.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, that's looking like potentially week one and all that said, but it might not be the case.
Another week one overreaction, but those formations with three tight ends on the field lends itself to creating a lot of blocking space for Hyde. So I've been very pleased with his performance so far.
I think he's got, you know, it'd be interesting to see what kind of points and numbers Brady puts up against this Buffalo defense.
I think that's one of the... I was looking earlier actually across the fixtures and seeing which games I'd like to sit down and really watch start to finish this week, and what I love about this league is I'm looking across the league and there's pretty much all of them I want to sit down and watch, but the Brady against this Bills defense is certainly one that should be a fun and intriguing watch.
Yeah, do we know what in the UK, do we know what's on blackout this weekend? I've just gone to the app and it's not sharing, so it'll be interesting.
Is that an NFL owned app not working, Chris?
Oh, yeah, don't get me started.
Having major troubles over
here. I've had a day of it at work with PMs, PMOs.
Don't even know what you're talking about.
And all sorts of stuff. So don't get me started on that. Well, that's been put to bed for the weekend. Although I might have to pull the laptop out tomorrow and finish off a impact assessment, but I digress.
Moving on then.
Pipe and slippers. Matchup.
Matchup in week two. You are going to go down under again.
Yeah, brace. I wanted to, and mainly because of the fact that he had such a sort of shaky start last week, and kind of delve into how he'd had that such shaky start, given the fact that his lineup is pretty strong. So I guess your immediate thoughts when you look at that lineup
is that I'm on the wrong page on the league website, and I'm just getting there now. obviously, last week, Tony Romo scored well, and it's going to be good and interesting to see how he plays going forward, with obviously Dez out of the action now. You expect a high-scoring kind of game against the Eagles, but their defense is looking quite good on that back end as well, so it could be an interesting game for Romo.
Yeah, what was interesting was that people were going after the Brian Maxwell, who's come over from the Seahawks, and saying, oh, they paid him a lot of money and this, that and the other. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, fine, I get that. But, you know, you're going up against one of the best wide receivers in the game who was playing lights out. I think, you know, again, massive overreaction from week one. But you look down the list, and Gore struggled, obviously, with the cramps. Bolden really didn't do anything against, and I think that's always the concern with, and that's why, again, why I never pick up New England backs, is because you just don't know week to week, you know, and that would, you know, look at Jonas Gray, last year, who came in, racked up 200 yards and, you know, never see him again. And Ridley was another one who he'd look great one week, he'd drop it, and, you know, he'd be in the doghouse for 3 or 4 weeks. So, on that regard, it's interesting. I think Richard Rodgers was a nice pick, but again, Aaron Rodgers didn't go to really use his tight end, and James Jones was racking up points left, right, and centre.
I think what's also interesting about Bruce is I've just looked at his transaction list, and there's over a page of transactions from week one to week two in terms of movement, so it's somewhere around 15 movements of players that he's tinkered with.
Really?
So we're looking at things like, obviously, Golden Tate has been put on the injury report and has been limited this week.
Wow,
he's obviously his number one receiver, with Cruz going to be out still for the time being.
Some would call it death to churn.
Obviously, it's the Dynasty League where we have such a deep roster, and a lot of them are punts, and you see that almost in the lineup from week to week. Your flex positions, that we've got two of them, you can throw in wild cards almost.
Yeah, with that, he's dropped Cordell Patterson, Eddie Royal, Rob Streeter, and Kyrie Robinson to the bench. And Kyrie Robinson, to be fair, looked pretty feisty for New Orleans Saints there, but obviously Spiller's expected to be back, so whether that will lead to his carries this week. But I thought it was an interesting one to have a look at, and interesting to see how he bounces back against the Sharkies, who are also
0-1.
Zip, but that's probably owing a lot to Andrew Luck's struggles against that Bills defense.
Yes, he's got another tough test this week, Andrew. Going into the Jets are coming to Indianapolis, so another feisty defense for Andrew to go against. I don't know why I'm calling him Andrew. I feel it sound like the Indianapolis preseason home announcers calling the game.
Some of the home announcers are just absolutely. The best one is the Patriots guy. He's just amazing. He just hates everything that's not Patriots, and he's such a homer. Got them blinkers on.
Yeah. I don't know if you caught any of the Minnesota Vikings ones, but I've heard this chat before. He's been on PFT with Mike Florio because he is also a racehorse announcer. You can barely keep up with how fast he is calling the play. And it is just incredible. You can tell he does both jobs. His play calling is so super fast. He gets so many words in. It's quite amusing to listen to. But yeah, that's the matchups we're looking forward to in our fantasy leagues this week.
Excellent stuff. Anything you you want to cover off before we head to the exit, though?
I think I mentioned that I went 3-0. Did I? Yeah.
Yeah, you did. Okay. Multiple times, yeah.
And yourself went 2-1.
Yeah. Sorry.
But you added the fact you scored 100 in your loss. So.
Well, you know, I always say, I think if you score over 100 points in a game, I think you've got to consider yourself unlucky to lose. I always kind of have a quick gander at the other results that are kind of knocking around the leagues,
yeah.
On the basis that if I'd have been up against, yeah. I know it's maybe week to week, but I think it's always a good sort of, okay, well, am I on the right track, and do I need to, you know, overhaul the roster, or am I, you know, I think it keeps stuff in perspective, because I think there is that tendency to go, well, I need to pick up this, I need to make sure that this is going on, and I think sometimes just kind of keeping it all in perspective, and okay, well, if I'd have played this guy, I'd have actually, you know, won, and I'm pretty happy, because I've picked up a trade.
Yeah, I was just about to mention. There's a trade happening this week.
So I've been fishing around, because obviously I've got Jamal Charles and as my keeper, and Bell is to come back, and obviously he's suspended at the moment. But I felt I was a little bit sort of short at wide receiver, because I'd got Abdullah and Joseph Randall as sort of, you know, the flex running back positions. Yeah. Jordan Matthews and Chaz Johnson, and after the struggles of seeing Teddy Bridgewater on the Monday, it frightened me a little bit. So I was like, oh, well, where can I get a wide receiver from without losing one of the top two guys? And ended up managing to trade Joseph Randall for Jerry Macklin, which I thought was a pretty fair trade for both teams.
Yeah, after my initial confusion following the message you sent me, thinking you were on about Reuben Randall, I thought that's very unfair for you to get that trade, or just very good hustle. It's fairly even. Obviously, Randall is supposedly the number one back down there in Dallas, and Macklin's obviously number one receiver. So,
yeah, the way I looked at it was that you've got a number one back who is supposed to be the number one back, but there's a lot of talk that he's going to be surpassed by maybe Christian Michael. McFadden's going to eat into his carries. Dunbar has taken a lot of stuff out of the backfield. Versus Macklin in a team which is not renowned for, you know, obviously scoring touchdowns with wide receivers. So I felt in that regard both players had their upside, but also big kind of question marks against them.
Yeah, I think when you now look at what your team will look like when Bell is back from week three, when you have Bradford, Charles, Bell, then Matthews and Macklin, with Abdullah in your flex,
yeah,
currently.
Yeah, I managed to pick up Tyler Eifert as my tight end. All of a sudden, does it, you know, if I can manage to grind out a result this week and get to 1-1, I could be looking really, really solid going into week three.
Yes, so excellent trade there. I think that just about rounds it all up. It was indeed. So a bit of housekeeping. Obviously, we are fairly active on the Twitter sphere. So I am at Stephen Rudkin. The podcast is at Pipe_Slippers. And yourself?
I am at Roger M. Kirby.
One other thing I wanted to try and get some of you guys who are listening to, as we have many listeners now, is to please try and rate and add a review on iTunes, because that's really good for us and helps us out, get up the rankings, try and take on the Ross Tucker empire and see if we can
kick him up. Desperate to quit this day, Rob. It's going to happen. And also, as well, if you are listening and you're in the actual Pipe and Slippers Fantasy Football League that we've started, which is the Dynasty League, Anthony's doing an excellent job of this newsletter, and it's hilariously funny. And obviously, he's putting a bit of time into this, so please do get involved with it. You know, I think it's well worth supporting, just like the podcast. I know we enjoy doing it, and it one where we've occasionally been extremely vain and listened back. To be fair, it's not been horrendous.
Oh, I listen back purely for editorial purposes, not for my own vanity at all. This has been a fun one. Until next week.
Sipping a tea.